Gascoigne going to have a crack? He is, you know. Oh, I say! Brilliant!
Oh, this young man is a sensation! Dele Alli, out of League One, into the Premier League! Oh, what a goal! It's Danny Rose on his Premier League debut!
Sheringham Fleck and Klinsmann is in!
He's got it lost under his feet and it's come from the middle!
Welcome back to another edition of the Internet's most dangerous Tottenham Hotspur podcast. It's Wheeler Dealer Radio. I'm your host, Greg, and I'm joined by Brian and Ben this week, and we have quite a bit to talk about. Two victories by Tottenham Hotspur. First against Manchester City over the weekend. A resounding, unquestionable 2-0 victory against Manchester City. And then we had a equally emphatic 3-2 win against Southampton in the FA Cup today. We're recording this on Wednesday, of course, setting Tottenham into their winter break with two things to feel really good about. Ben, how good are you feeling about Tottenham Hotspur right now?
Oh, man. I mean, I think after these barnstorming victories, where we comfortably waltzed to a 2-0 and a 3-2 victory, I think, you know, all criticism of Jose Mourinho needs to be put to bed forever. We are clearly going to reel Liverpool back in and win the league.
I bet on it. Brian, are you planning to fly to England for the victory parade?
I mean, I think we need to walk back the expectations a little bit. I think catching Liverpool is out of the question, but certainly second place again would be great. And we're probably going to win the FA Cup and the Champions League.
Definitely. But let's actually talk about these games. I think I was very sort of surprised. Mourinho's time at Spurs, I feel like, has brought some curious reactions from the press. There was, like, he got a lot of criticism for the game we played against Liverpool, which I thought was kind of wild, considering that against what was essentially a full-strength Liverpool, we played them pretty even, if not slightly better than them, and we were pretty unlucky not to come out with a point, let alone win that game. And he took a lot of stick for that game because we set up sort of in a defensive formation and really played a counter-attacking game. And he just got a lot of stick for it. This week against City, I don't know, there were a lot of people who were very I feel like a lot of fans were very happy with this result. And a lot of media, I think, there was a lot of media reaction basically trying to pump the brakes on being too excited about this. And that just took me by surprise because I don't think this was as good as the Liverpool game. I want to be very clear about that. But I thought, as opposed to this game against Southampton, the game against City is the kind of theft you feel kind of good about. I thought there was a lot of positives in this game. Obviously, we only won this game because we got kind of lucky in terms of City not finishing their opportunities, but I thought that was an encouraging match for Spurs. There was a lot that went right. We did, I thought, pretty well in terms of creating some threats against City, even if our shot totals definitely weren't there. But I thought it was an encouraging match. Other people don't agree. Ben, was this just outright theft and I'm a crazy person and there's, like, we really shouldn't feel good in terms of signs moving forward coming out of this match, or am I on to something?
There's positive. You're on to nothing. No, okay. Positives, but, like, this is highway robbery. I mean, both of these games, Jose's 11 put together two classic heists. We got outshot by Man City 19-3, and we scored two of our three shots. Like, it was not a impressive, comprehensive performance by any means. We were getting pounded.
I mean, I'm not saying it's a performance we're on top during. I'm just saying, like, compare that to, say, today against Southampton, where we were a total mess. Compare it to, say, the first game against City, where we drew them 2-2. I just thought this was a much more positive performance from Spurs than either of those games, the game against City this weekend.
Well, okay, look, yes, it was better than the first game against City. I will definitely agree to that. And I think there's some more positive sort of structurally, systematically in the Man City game than the Southampton game. Like, our defense was a better shape. We were well organized. You know, we kind of had a game plan to sit deep and counter. and it broadly worked, even though it took, you know, a missed penalty in the first half. It took a red card for Man City. You know, they played with 10 men for half an hour. And it was only then that we were able to really get on top and score. You know, that's two huge, huge breaks to tip a game in our favor. Whereas against Southampton, I don't know that, yeah, we had a very clear game plan. We were just as exposed. You know, Man City took 14 shots in the box against us, which is an insane amount of shots in the box. And then Southampton had 13 shots in the box. Like, and they're Southampton, not Man City. So it's definitely better, you know, given quality of opposition, whatever. But we were not good in either of these games.
See, I disagree with that against City. I mean, I understand what you're saying, and I don't want to take away from that luck didn't play into this, because you're absolutely right. We are lucky that City did not convert some of those chances. Put the penalty aside. Like, they took a bad penalty, it got saved. That's on City, not on us. But obviously we got lucky. They, like, especially when there was the open net when Tanganga ran into Lloris, and that somehow City managed to fuck that up. Like, we're lucky they didn't score. But at the same time, you know, Tottenham's problem in this game, I thought, was really not creating shots. It wasn't that we weren't creating dangerous attack, at least counter-attacking opportunities. We were constantly getting down there, constantly making City defend. And I think this is the single biggest problem with Spurs right now. We just aren't, and I think it's because we're missing a real center forward, or at least we're not playing, we're playing Lucas and not Son up there for a lot of the time, is that there's no one up there to sort of take advantage of these attacking moves. And I thought against City, you could really see that threat. We'll talk about this more later, but like Winks was creating a lot of counter-attacking opportunities. Winks got Shevchenko sent off, which was, you know, incredible.
Shevchenko?
Yeah, fuck. Yes. You never saw him play for City after that. But he got him sent off. It was, I thought we were doing smart, dangerous things. And in that sending off, like, I mean, Winks is all the way down the field if he doesn't get fouled there. So they were doing smart things. There was a plan that made sense. They were creating dangerous situations. I think there were still a lot of problems in that match, but I think there's a lot to take away from that. I don't think that was just a, you know, like I think the game against Southampton, we very much farted our way to a victory. And I don't think you could say that about the City match.
I mean, again, I think you can. But I think the things that, like, the City game, I think, gave us a lot of individual positives and some positives for, like, what this team might look like in an ideal situation. You know, we had Hugo Lloris played well, had a good penalty save, and it reminded all of us what it was like to have a great goalkeeper instead of Gazzaniga in the net. You know, that was nice. Tanganga, once again, looked like he can actually play left back.
Aside from that one bit.
Yeah, you know, he's young, he'll make a few mistakes, but, like, he largely kept Riyad Mahrez, who's been in incredible form this season, very quiet. After he did pretty much the same to Sadio Mane against Liverpool, you know, he's starting to look like, okay, this guy who is a center back by trade and definitely not left-footed is now capable of playing on either side of fullback and in the middle of the park and not embarrassing himself. You know, Harry Winks, I think you already covered, looked encouraging. Lo Celso continues to be excellent. And we got our first glimpse of Steven Bergwijn, who had a phenomenal goal and was just dangerous throughout.
I was about to say, he looked great all match. Like, I mean, not just in his attacking movements, which I thought were great, the way he showed for the balls and all that, but he was also, I mean, putting in a shift defensively. So I was super impressed with him.
Yeah, and so that's, I think, the thing that comes out of that game when you walk away with a 2-0 victory. That is, again, you know, by expected goals, it was like 0.5 to 2-something the other way. You look at all those individual performances, and you can start to see, like, the shape of something to come and feel good about it. But, you know, we play that game 100 times. We're not winning very many of them. It was lucky. Like, we can't discount the fact
that... No, I think it was lucky. I just think the way some people have been talking about it, they've been talking about it like I would talk about the Southampton game today, where, like, God, you know, we're so fortunate we came away with a win today. And while I think we definitely rode our luck to some extent against City, I think there was quality there. You know, our attacking moves weren't entirely out of nowhere. These were well set up strikes, even if there weren't enough of them. There was something there that you sort of feel good about beyond just like, oh, that worked out well. Whereas against Southampton, I don't think there's much you feel good about other than we got out of that game alive.
You look at our attacking moves against Southampton. Sorry, I'm finishing a cherry from my Manhattan right now. It's going down the wrong way. This is a very professional podcast. But once Dele came on and was playing in that kind of false nine pseudo center forward role, you know, both of our goals, at least, I mean, the Lucas Moura goal and the Son penalty, were both very nice attacks that were well-structured, good passing, found space, you know, got between center backs. Like, it was not like we weren't putting together nice moves. It's just that it was Southampton, so you kind of expect us to be doing that, and we really didn't very often.
Yes, I mean, certainly that City result is is benefiting from the bigotry of low expectations, but I still think it's a game you feel good about, as opposed to, like I said, that first City match, where you're just like, oh my god, how did we come out of that with a point? Like, there's enough there that you feel like you saw something that you're going to get something out of moving forward. All right, Brian, do you have any thoughts? Yeah.
Well, I don't want to talk about the games. I want to talk about the important things like VAR. That's what I want to talk about.
Our podcast's favorite topic.
Yeah, I don't want to talk about tactics or how Jose Mourinho is a brilliant mastermind who once again got another one over on Pep Guardiola. I just want to talk about refereeing decisions and why they are amazing for the most part. Wow, you guys aren't going to engage in this conversation. I'll just do it all myself. That's fine.
Yeah, go for it.
So Raheem Sterling definitely should have been sent off. Aurier's penalty was definitely a penalty. Pretty sure the one on Lloris was probably also a penalty.
Yep. What was the rationale for that? That he was simulating at the same time? Or that did they just ignore the fact that Hugo's hand hit Sterling's foot before
it got to the ball? I was listening to another podcast earlier this week.
How dare you?
I know. I'm betraying our listeners. And I believe the explanation that they gave was not that there wasn't contact, but that the position in which the foul occurred wasn't really a particularly dangerous position. Like, there was almost no chance of Sterling being able to get a shot off from there or to score a goal. And so that a penalty would have been harsh. But that doesn't seem to be in the rules at all, so I don't know how that decision I don't know how on a relook at it with VAR that is why that decision was made. I think the only possible reason is that that the referee didn't see anything in
I think the reason it wasn't
VAR
given
couldn't find anything that it could see to overturn it.
I think the reason it wasn't given is that the like 5 minutes prior to that were such a total shit show. They didn't want to risk making it even worse on something that marginal. Can we talk about the Sterling or the penalty on Aguero? Like, 2 minutes went by before they actually called it, and I feel like if it's taken longer than 30 seconds, you stop play. Because, like, what happens if someone gets a red card? What happens if someone gets hurt? What happens if someone else scores a goal? I mean, you just keep on going and decide not to worry about it? I mean, that could have really fucked the game up.
So that happened, I think, in an Atlanta United game last season where we conceded a goal and they pulled it back, discounted the goal, went all the way back down and gave us a penalty the other direction. And we went from, like, 4-3 down to 4-3 up in, like, the span of 2 minutes because of VAR and the refereeing decisions. And it's insane that they wait until the ball goes out of play before they pull it back to look at anything. And, you know, you've seen here, like, sometimes that could take minutes before the ball goes out of play. But I don't know, like, when's an appropriate time to stop it? If, like, you know, there was no penalty and you don't want to pull it back for a non-call, and, you know, the other team is building an attack and doing well, like, you want to let them play that out and see what happens before you, you know, kill it. It's a really tough
problem. I mean, I just feel like you can't, I don't know exactly what the answer is, but it feels like to me where if it's becoming clear after, like I said, I think you got to pick an arbitrary number, 20, 30 seconds, that like, ooh, we really need to sit down and look at this. You know, you got to stop the game somehow. And then, I don't know, do a drop ball or something if it's not working out. If, you know, in the team that's losing possession's favor, like, you know, you find some way to reward them afterwards. But, like, there's got to be a point at which, okay, if this requires deeper examination, we need to we can't let the game keep going while we figure this out.
Yeah, it's nonsensical, but I don't know that just arbitrarily stopping the game, and then imagine they just like stopped the game when Spurs had the ball in a semi-dangerous position, and then they were like, "Oh, actually, there was no penalty. Sorry, carry on." Then you'd be screaming about, you know, a promising attack that got nipped in the bud to check a penalty from a minute ago. You know, like when do you do that? And so it's just hard. I think
I think it's difficult.
There were definitely opportunities during those 2 minutes to stop it. There was time when City had the ball at the back and they were, you know, they were transitioning it forward. You could have stopped it right there, and if you'd have found nothing, given them an indirect free kick that they could have, you know, like it didn't have to be 2 minutes, 2.5 minutes, whatever it ended up being, of just thinking we'd gotten past that.
I don't know about you guys, when they blew the whistle, I was like, surely not. Like it's been, it felt like it had been 5 minutes since that stupid foul. I don't know. Like, okay, I watch much more English football than I watch in other countries. Whenever I seem to watch a game in Spain or Germany, for instance, and there's a VAR thing, it never seems to be this bad. Like, I mean, I'm not saying they haven't done dumb stuff in those countries, but it never seems to be as dramatic or as complicated as the English have made it this year. And I don't know if that's how they're applying it, or I'm sure that's how it's about how they're applying it, but it never seems to be this messy when I watch it in other countries. And I don't know why that is. Maybe I'm just not watching enough Spanish and German football to accurately get a feel for it, but it never seems to be this bad. And
I mean, the other thing is just like, it seems like the Premier League is applying, it is true that the Premier League is applying the way that VAR is utilized in a different way, like the way that they're calling handballs here versus in European competition, and it's like the Premier League is trying to do this fence sitting thing where they've accepted that other leagues are using the technology that's available to them, but they don't like the way in which that technology is being utilized, so they are trying to do some sort of overly managed version of it that keeps the game of football as close to their idea of how the game should be in England. And it's just very weird, and it's working so poorly.
Do you think they're being such big nitpickers about it because they want it to fail and get rid of it as quickly as possible?
I mean, I just don't see how they can do that if on a weekly basis some of your best teams are playing in European competitions where that technology is utilized. I just don't see, like, to me, the Premier League, like, having an agenda where they want it to be gone, or they want to hamstring it in such a way so that it makes the game look a certain way or feel a certain way, is beyond stupid. And it just doesn't make any sense for their global brand, for the product on the field, for anything. Like, they just have to be dumb. Like, it makes no sense.
Yeah, I can't see the conspiracy theory that the Premier League is tanking VAR on purpose makes any sense. And especially because you're right, it's in the Champions League. We're going to have to contend with it somewhere. It's in the World Cup. Like, no, the whole world isn't scrapping it. So the Premier League needs to figure out how to make it work somehow. And this, I think, is, again, more due to incompetence than any kind of conspiracy. Unlike, you know, the Iowa delegates in the Democratic caucus.
Oh, good, good. Glad we're joining the ranks of podcasts talking about that. it's so intrusive in a way it doesn't feel in other countries, and I don't, you know, I'm not listening to like Spanish pundits or German pundits, so maybe the conversation is just as dumb in those countries as it is surrounding English football, but it just, I don't know, it just seems like they're making it harder than it needs to be.
And I think the other part of the problem is, specifically for us, is that we are American sports fans, and we are so used to instant replay being a part of the way in which we consume sports. You know, particularly in the American football context, I mean, replay review has been in existence in the NFL and college football for, what, the better part of a decade? You know,
well, the difference is in every American sport is there's a place for it in terms of the pace of the game, in terms of, like, American football or baseball stops. Now, yeah, there's issues in terms of about pace of play and all that other stuff, but there is a natural pause in the game where it's like, okay, it's football, there's a challenge on a play, like, we're going to just stop it right here for a few minutes and, like, look at it. Whereas, you know, soccer has this continuous clock on it, and it just makes instant replay so much harder because there's not, you know, unless a guy just gets cleaned out or someone scored a goal and we're trying to figure out if it was offsides, there's not a natural place to just make these things stop and not interrupt the flow of the match. And I don't know what the solution to that is. Like, waiting 2 minutes to figure something like this out doesn't seem like a viable, ongoing way to handle it, though.
I don't know. I'm bored of talking about VAR, though. Can we talk about Steven Bergwijn?
I got some bad news for probably the next couple years.
Can we talk about Steven Bergwijn, for the love of God?
That was a really good debut goal. Appropriate, even, that as Danny Rose leaves the club, someone else has a screamer on their Premier League debut. Just a really well-taken goal. Was that a good pass from Lucas or a bad pass that he made the most out of?
I think a bit of both. I think, like, the idea was very good, and I think, you know, getting it there through traffic was very good, but it was difficult to control. And Bergwijn was just, I mean, the way he took that off of his broad, beautiful chest.
He is a thick boy, yeah, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. He's a robust gentleman. but yeah, I mean, the way he just, like, without even thinking, just sort of took that down off of his chest, right onto his foot on the volley, was just a thing of beauty. And it's nice to see somebody else who has those sort of goal-scoring instincts in the side, because we've been really, really lacking that without Kane.
Well, I just think if we're going to do this long ball thing, he is so much more useful than Lucas in particular. I think he adds a lot. I don't think he's an immediate solution to everything that ails this team, but I think he really does help this attack. And I think you can see it a little bit today, how we struggled. You know, we couldn't do some of the same things we were able to do against City without him on the pitch. And I'm really looking forward to seeing him getting integrated into this team. Honestly, I'm really excited to see Bergwijn against the team that isn't Manchester City, you know, where he can maybe cook a little bit and isn't, you know, constantly either on the counterattack or playing defense. I mean, I'm very excited.
I would have loved to see him today running at James Ward-Prowse playing, yes, way out of position at right back. Because I thought Sessegnon did pretty well today in that role, but he doesn't have nearly the same set of skills that Bergwijn does. It's, you know, he got the ball in dangerous areas and was able to sort of, like, run in a straight line once he got the ball in good space. And he gave JWP tons of problems. And I'm imagining a sort of trickier, more creative attacker in that same spot. And it's very, very exciting to think what Stevie B could do.
Oh, please do not give Ryan's nicknames. Like, we know they're terrible. Ryan has a history of terrible nicknames. Let's not encourage him.
I don't hate Stevie B.
Big Steve. Big Steve. He was it's so promising. It's so encouraging. I think we were all getting our jokes off after, like, okay, like, Giovanni Lo Celso, who killed it in Spain and France, isn't ready for the Premier League, but this guy just steps into the team after playing in the Netherlands and I mean, I guess so. He looked great. I mean, he looked really, really good. And it's just so... I was listening to, I think, the Athletic Spurs podcast. They were talking about, like, how much energy there is when, like, a new attacker, like, steps on the field for the first time. And I mean, they're not wrong. It was really exciting to sort of just see this new guy in our attack just doing different things than we'd seen for most of the year. And, you know, especially because it's against City and because we're going to have to play a certain way against them. You know, you sort of dream on what's he going to be able to do when we're playing a team where our attack is a little more coherent or has a little more room to work.
Yeah, or he gets to face Aston Villa in a week.
Well, hopefully he hasn't gotten, you know, the rest of our club's sickness in him yet and will kick their ass. But I'm excited to see him cook against Villa. That should be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there haven't been a ton of positives this season. And I think, you know, one of the things that we keep looking to is how our new signings like Lo Celso and Ndombele in particular have thrived. But in this past week, getting to see Bergwijn kick ass, Sessegnon have a good day out today, Jedson had a good performance today as well, you know.
Lo Celso had a good month. Lo Celso had a good month that I think everyone's excited about.
Yeah, just seeing that fresh blood like do really well and like give the team a bit of a lift, you know, even when our performances aren't necessarily as comprehensive as we'd like them to be, you know, I think that's just really, really fun and exciting. It's something that the fans have desperately needed to cling on to. And, you know, you just got to hope that it all sort of congeals into some sort of system that can get all of these guys on the pitch and revitalize the guys who have had shaky starts to the season and, you know, combined to something a little more comprehensive. But it just feels close, right?
Yeah, well, it feels better, which is like we're at the point where what we want to see is, or what we're hoping, what we're seeing and hoping keeps developing is new players sort of growing into roles on the team, growing into the Premier League. And that's exciting to watch because before we were just like, when is Eriksen going to stop sucking? When is Danny Rose going to get it together? And I think as sports fans, we have that sort of deep in our souls. We know that generally when a player's not playing well for an extended period of time off of something like that, there's, you know, we kind of know that you're really hoping for something that probably isn't going to happen. And just sort of pinning your hopes on exciting new talent as opposed to let's just hope the old guys get it together. It just, I don't know. It's more exciting. It feels better. It feels more realistic in terms of like dreaming of a future for your club than just hoping the old guys get it together. And it's been good to watch. Like Lo Celso having a good month has done more to get me excited about the future of this team, both in terms of, okay, he's looking good now and maybe there's something you can really build on in the midfield, and in terms of Mourinho doesn't seem allergic to him anymore, so maybe he won't be a total fuck up as our manager long term. It's great, and it's better than what we had all season, so hopefully it keeps on going.
And I kind of liked the symmetry of Bergwijn getting to score on his debut, you know, right after we had let Danny Rose go, who had, of course, scored the best debut goal ever. So I thought that was a nice little touch.
Was this better than Danny's? Was this better than Danny's debut?
No, I don't think so.
Was it a better goal, just on its own merits? Is like, I guess what I was asking.
No, Danny Rose's goal was a once in a lifetime moment. You could ask Danny Rose about it. You know, he never came close again. So I guess the positive is that Bergwijn hopefully will come close, surpass it, and score many, many more top drawer finishes for us. But yeah, it was a nice passing of the torch from Danny and Christian Eriksen's number onto Bergwijn.
So Bergwijn had a great Bergwijn. I'm gonna learn how to pronounce that sooner. No, I don't learn how to pronounce anyone's names. Why start now? Bergwijn had a great debut match, but I think another big story of this match was Harry Winks, who I know we praised him recently, and God knows that's a weird feeling for me, but had another great match against Manchester City. Still not the best defensive midfielder, although he's not bad at tackling when he wants to be, but really good at progressing the ball, or at least had a very good day against City progressing the ball in a way that, again, feels kind of new for him, and also played really smart in this match. Got someone sent off on purpose. That was a great move, great play. My favorite part of that was you could see him celebrating as soon as the ref pulled out the red card. It was incredible. I thought it was another promising match out of Winks. And like we were talking earlier, Ben, about, you know, sort of this base that we have to build on, it's really, it would be really encouraging if Winks is really part of that next, you know, great Tottenham team, or hopefully great Tottenham team, that he's part of that foundation you have to build on.
Yeah, I mean, local boy come good is always a nice story, you know, especially with Harry Kane being cooked. it's important to have a new homegrown talent to hang all your hopes on.
Friendship with Harry Kane canceled. Is that what you're trying to say?
That's right. Now Harry Winks is my best friend. But yeah, I think the trick with Winks is to figure out a structure that allows him to do the things that he's starting to show that he can do really well, while minimizing the things that he just definitely does poorly, which is defend in transition. I mean, we are still conceding a lot more chances up the gut than we should be, and he's a big part of that. He's just not super positionally disciplined. He's not, you know, great at shepherding dangerous opportunities into less dangerous areas. He just sort of seems to be chasing a lot. And sometimes he puts in a good tackle, and sometimes, you know, he gets walked past.
But he's safe in possession, which he always has been.
Yeah, and the thing is,
if you add the progressive passing to the mix, then you might have a player.
Right. And what we haven't seen yet is, you know, this ideal midfield that could carry Winks in a way that is beneficial is Lo Celso, Ndombele, and Winks all together. And, you know, we saw Lo Celso and Winks together against Man City, and then we saw Ndombele and Winks and Eric Dier. Well, Dier was more of a center back, I guess, for most of the match. Things got shuffled around, the formation shifted. But, you know, we haven't seen quite the ideal version of the midfield, so those weaknesses have been exposed more than you'd like. But I think it's definitely nice to see, you know, him kind of grow into some kind of role that's a little more useful than tidy sideways passer.
Well, I think what you said about Winks, I feel like you could say about our entire midfield, which is like Lo Celso, Ndombele, Winks. I mean, yes, you talked about all of them on the field at once, but I feel like all of them would be improved if you could just put them next to an actual defensive midfielder who, you know, we have the corpse of Eric Dier shambling around out there, and obviously they're not even going to pretend to put Wanyama out there. So clearly I feel like we ought to buy someone in the summer if we couldn't find anyone in this winter window. So I have that same thought about every one of our midfielders. I just love to see them next to a real defensive midfielder to allow them to do their thing.
Yeah, I think the hope is that between the three of them, or any two of them, they give you enough defensive between them that it's not the end of the world. But obviously, a defensive midfielder is going to give a better platform. But yeah, it's nice to see all three of them, you know, showing up, doing pretty well. And Ndombele had played today. He sort of scored a goal.
Doesn't look.
He had an assist off the bench against Man City.
Had his moments, but didn't look. He looked real rusty today, I thought. Like, at least, like, as the match wore on.
Yeah, again, we're struggling to see him put together, like, a full comprehensive performance. But when he does shine, boy, I mean, that shimmy against Rodri alone is, you know, a Hall of Fame moment in my mind for anything Spurs have ever done.
That was real good. Wouldn't have happened if Rodri had a tattoo or two, but he doesn't, so.
Yeah, he's the right kind of defensive midfielder. The kind of defensive midfielder gets shook out of his shoes.
See, we did deserve to win the match. If he gets shook like that, then they do deserve to lose.
It's true.
Now, Brian, as much as we're talking about Spurs players sort of coming into their own or settling in, unfortunately, we have a defender who's not really doing any of those things. Jan Vertonghen had what I think you could charitably call a rough day at the office today against Southampton, didn't he?
Yeah, I mean, it was real bad. And, I mean, he came off at the, I think it was like the 52nd minute, and he just kind of went to the bench. And I'm not going to say he sulked, but he looked distraught.
Like, he looked real shook. I mean,
yeah. I mean, and I don't think that I could pick out anything that happened that was, like, particularly egregious on his part or that, like, he was, like, super at fault for. But I don't know. It just wasn't a good match for him. It wasn't a good match for, you know, a lot of Spurs players because, you know, we let Southampton have a lot of the ball. But, you know, overall, yeah, it was really not good day for Jan. And you start to wonder, he didn't sign a new deal in January. Is he not going to get one now? And I don't know if that's how he's going to play. I'm much more comfortable using Davinson Sanchez, using Tanganga. Not more comfortable using Juan Foyth, but you know, I think maybe the ship has finally started to sail on Vertonghen, which is really sad because he's one of my favorite Spurs players from, you know, this kind of era of Tottenham Hotspur. And he's been so important to the club over the last, 7 years or however long he's been at the club. And so it's real depressing that it's ending this way.
Well, it's sudden too. And I mean, I know there was that, like, tiff he had with Pochettino, and he might have had the injury, but it doesn't feel like there was a major injury that did this. I don't know about you guys. Maybe I was missing something. He didn't feel like he was, like, bad last year. I mean, he certainly would have been in what I consider, like, I'd sign into a reasonable extension before this season started. I mean, he's been terrible this year, and it just seems like he fell off a cliff, like, all of a sudden.
I think we were talking at the end of last season that, you know, it made sense to give Jan a 2 or 3 year deal because it certainly seemed like, you know, he had the type of game that, you know, had never really been predicated on pace or power. And like he'd just been good at positioning, good at reading the game and, you know, good at picking his spots and was very good technically. And so that was something that you thought maybe he could sustain for a few more seasons. And
yeah, maybe you can't play left back anymore, but you can stick him in at center back still. Like, you know, pair him with someone who's fast.
He was good last year. He was good last year, and he was good the year before.
It's weird because Pochettino, I think, gave an interview where he was talking about Vertonghen recently. You know, not recently, you know, while he was still here. But he pointed to him as a guy who, you know, could easily go another 3 or 4 years. Like, he had the physicality for it. He was the kind of athlete, the kind of player that, you know, had plenty of years left in the tank. And it just, yeah, sure doesn't look like that. And I'm shocked to see how this happened and what Pochettino saw that clearly isn't playing out on the pitch.
Well, Pochettino also was, like, exiling him from the team, and we all assumed it was, like, a contract issue. And maybe it was, but, I mean, you got to think that perhaps there was a fitness issue there. That if there's an injury behind this, it's nothing that we've had any indication of. Or that would feel, or and it's certainly nothing that feels like it should be affecting him the way it has.
Yeah. And just, oh God, his face just sitting on the bench when he walked off was just, it was just heartbreaking. It was hard to watch. Well, it was like, look, it was a man who could tell that he did not have a good day at the office and maybe is not good.
Well, for Tongans, when
they're just not capable.
It's like Brian said, he's been the rock of our defense for, like, I don't know, almost a decade now? Like, 8 years or something like that? I mean, he's been so reliable for Spurs. I think he's probably one of the more
He's our longest-serving player. With Danny Rose.
Yeah. I think he's one of the most underappreciated players in the Premier League during his time here. I mean, you know, if you put that guy on a United or a City, and we just never were in any danger of losing him, and I don't know why, but boy, he looks real bad right now. I wouldn't sign him to an extension, like, of any sort, would you?
I'd give him another year. I think just out of sentimentality, I guess, but I don't know.
Unless you know something's wrong with him and it's going to get better. It's just...
I don't know. I don't think, like, this is like a Moussa Dembele situation where you look at it and you go, oh, yeah, his ankle is obviously... He can't do this anymore. That doesn't seem like what the deal with Vertonghen is. Like, I don't know. I mean,
I'm starting to think he can't do it anymore. There's not a thing I can point at, but...
Yeah, but my thing is I just find it so hard to believe that overnight he would have just fallen off of a cliff. And, like, look, you know, this wasn't a great game. He didn't play particularly well. The tactics weren't particularly great. We talked about at the beginning. We squeaked a win, you know, on the... We fluked our way into it, basically. And so I'm not ready to say that he's definitely done at Spurs, or that I think he's completely crocked and, you know, he'll never be good again. And maybe that's the optimist in me. But I don't know. I just think I don't believe he will get another contract at Spurs, but certainly I think it would be worth it if you could keep him around for another year just to have numbers to I think he's probably a good influence in the squad. I don't know.
I mean, unless they know about an injury or his health status and about something that we don't, that makes you think you're going to get something different next year. I mean, you know, I mean, this plus another year of wear and tear doesn't make me highly optimistic. And I hate to say that because he's been so good for us. But weirdly, it looks like we kept the right Belgian, or at least we signed the right Belgian to an extension.
Yeah, I don't re-sign him. I think he's done. And I hate to say it. I'm sad to see him go, but I think the Jan Vertonghen era has come to a close.
It's just... it is really sad. A lot of turnover at Spurs right now. And I think going back to the more positive thing you were saying, Ben, it seems like whatever else is wrong with this team, one of the differences between now and the beginning of the season is at least now they're in a rebuild that makes... at least parts of it make sense, or you can see them targeting certain things. And it's not just the same old, same old. So, yeah, so, anyway.
So let's get back to the positive future.
Yeah, so Tottenham is...
and all our exciting new players.
Tottenham is 4 points off of the top four. And we are into the round of whatever the next round is of the FA Cup. I don't know. Like, what do you see in Spurs' future this year? Do you think we have a shot at either the FA Cup or top four?
Brian, so top four,
or Ben, we can start with you.
Sorry. The top four races, Spurs play Aston Villa, not this weekend, but next weekend, and during the same match week, which spans two weekends because the winter break couldn't be done cleanly and easily, we have half the teams playing this weekend and half playing the next, because the FA are a bunch of geniuses. Chelsea have Man U, which is, you know, they drew to Leicester this past weekend when we beat Man City. And now they have a tough game, and we have a pretty winnable game before we play each other head-to-head. Chelsea have been struggling lately without Christian Pulisic. It's very, very possible that we go to play Chelsea in a couple weeks only 1 point behind them, and a win kind of gives us control of our destiny. It's not impossible. Like, we don't look great, but we're still somehow in the mix. I think top four is very much still on the cards and something we could do. Do you think it'll happen, Brian?
I think it's possible. I mean, like you said, Chelsea have been really bad lately, and whether that's down to missing Pulisic or whether it's just Frank Lampard's a fraud, or any number of other things. They've really come back to earth lately. And, you know, we've still got that head-to-head match against them. And I think our schedule down the stretch isn't that bad. And 4 points isn't that much. And considering how bad we've played, you know, over the course of the entire season to be in this position. I don't think we could ask for much more.
I think it was Michael we were talking to a few weeks ago was saying, you know, like Tottenham have a relatively easy run in the league over the last couple, you know, over the last like 2 months or so. And if we were the way you put it is like if we were playing better, I'd feel better about our chances of making the top four. But you know, the idea is like, oh well, we're skeptical that he's going to be able that we're going to be able to beat some of these bad teams because we have troubles with it this year. And I think now with Lo Celso coming in the team, with Bergwijn here, it's starting to feel, and Dembélé coming back, it's starting to feel like maybe this is something we can put together, especially if we can, you know, really put the screws to Chelsea in 2 weeks, or 3 weeks, I guess. It's just, it's funny how I feel like in a lot of ways, we're, even though I think we're playing a little bit better than we were then, right now, we're kind of in the exact same situation we were with Chelsea when we played them around Christmas time, where, ooh, Spurs have really gotten close to top four. We just have to beat Chelsea this weekend. And then, of course, Dr. Tottenham came to town and fixed a lot of Chelsea's problems. So hopefully the rest of the league being underwhelming will work for us. We can lie, cheat, and steal our way into the top four and then, I don't know, turn ourselves into a coherent unit in the summer and actually not be god-awful next season. On the one hand, that feels logical. On the other hand, I feel like I'm talking myself into something that isn't going to happen.
So looking at our schedule down the stretch, it's pretty comparable to Chelsea. We both play Wolves, Man U, and Sheffield United, who are, you know, in the mix for that sort of Europa League spots. But our two hardest games are Leicester and Arsenal, and Chelsea's two hardest games are Liverpool and Man City. So, you know, we've gotten both of those out of the way already. You know, Leicester are obviously a good team. Arsenal are not, but they're still Arsenal, and that's going to be tough for us. You know, by the same token, we also play West Ham. but, you know, the schedule is definitely favorable for us to see the season out ahead of Chelsea. Now, you know, there's still, like I said, a lot of clubs in the mix. Sheffield United, Wolves, Man U are all right there. You know, Arsenal's in 10th, so don't worry about them. But, you know, we really have a real opportunity. And if we beat Aston Villa, and even if we don't beat Chelsea, I'd like to beat Chelsea. But, you know, this is something that is likely to go down to the wire. Which I would not have expected, you know, a few months ago, saying that Spurs had a whole season to play for. But it looks like we're probably going to.
It's kind of weird. We haven't been in this situation for a few years, fighting for fourth at the end of the year, which kind of underlines how steady everything was under Pochettino until suddenly it wasn't.
Yeah, I mean, we hung on to fourth by a thread last season, but yes. Your point is correct.
We also had like gave ourselves a ton of room to lose a ton of games in the second half of last season. We had quite the lead before we, you know, stopped playing well for like five fucking months.
Right. Which, you know, again, is a possibility that we just decide to do that again. But yeah, I think we're going to be in it.
So, Brian, do you feel vindicated by just wanting something different every week? Because you certainly got it.
Yeah, this is demonstrably better than everything we've been doing for the past, like, I don't know, 9 months before Mourinho took over. I mean, you know, the fact that these two games were similar, but they were similar in only in the end result. And then, you know, we've got the Liverpool game where we actually played pretty well but lost. And, you know, it's a lot better than, gosh, we really suck. And, you know, maybe eventually we'll turn it around. I'm enjoying it.
Ben, are you ready to give Jose Mourinho his just due? Or do you still find him enormously frustrating?
I mean, again, it's like, you know, when Tim Sherwood took over for AVB, he steered us to a sixth place finish when we had roughly a sixth place team, and it was just like the big fix was just getting rid of whatever toxic dressing room climate had developed over the course of that season, not so much a new tactically astute manager coming in and remolding this team into an effective fighting force. You know, it was just, we have a pretty good squad and that squad's going to go out there and do what it does. And, you know, sixth place was about right. I kind of feel like that's what's happening with Jose is, you know, we have a better team than most teams in the league for all of our deficiencies. And, you know, as long as everybody's not miserable and is happy to go out there and just put in a 90-minute shift, you know, we should win more games than we lose. So I'm not a convert to the cult of Mourinho yet. But, yeah, you can't deny that things are better.
I mean, yeah, it's different. How much of that's just the players don't hate the manager is, you know, up for debate. I think that clearly has some influence in it. I would say Mourinho has been a little more practical than Pochettino was in terms of trying to make certain things work or how he's using certain defenders. But I don't know. I don't know how much of it's being broken is how much of it's the team and how much of it's Mourinho himself. It'll be interesting to see us next year after a summer of presumably transfer activity and Mourinho having actual time to sort of build a team-wide philosophy that isn't just sort of immediately trying to get results in the middle of a season. We'll see. I'm hopeful, but a little skeptical at the same time. So here's hoping. We got an FA Cup run in us, maybe. I mean, if Mourinho devil magic is ever going to work, it's during the FA Cup run. Maybe we'll beat Liverpool's youth team in the final when Jurgen Klopp will watch it on television. All right.
And maybe we'll beat Liverpool in the Champions League final, too. I mean, who knows?
Definitely.
So,
are we going to do the treble, boys? Top four plus the Champions League and the FA Cup?
Yeah, sure. But no, Liverpool actually drew Chelsea in the FA Cup. And so it'll be curious to see if Klopp decides to actually show up to one of these matches and play his real team, or if he's just going to let, you know, Harvey Elliott and co. Go out in humiliating fashion.
I actually did the Klopp thing bother either of you guys? Because it actually bothered me. I thought, I don't care if he wants to play a youth team, but the fact that Klopp could be bothered to show up was pretty, I don't know. I feel like that's pretty Bush League.
Yeah, seeing
no,
James
I don't
Milner
care about that at all.
It's shitty. James no. Milner was there, like, on the sideline watching the team, and, like, the manager can't be there. Like, if you're going to say, you know, we don't take this seriously, the players need a rest, like, that's fine. But, like, these guys are still part of your football club, and, you know, maybe they have a future in your first team. And, like, I feel like you owe them the respect of showing up for their big game. And, you know, actually, like, casting an eye over the talent and seeing, you know, forget about, like, the disrespect to the magic of the cup. I don't care about that too much. Like, there's too many fucking cups. There's too many competitions. I get it. But at least show up. Like, you're the fucking manager.
The FA Cup seems a weird one to take that tact. Yeah, League Cup, I would actually have a lot more sympathy for that.
But everybody does this bullshit.
Yeah, the League Cup's dumb as hell, but
the FA Cup is some magical whatever. I don't know.
It's just, I like you said, I completely agree. I think it's disrespectful to your players. I think, you know, even if you just sit there on the bench and let your assistant manager, like, handle the actual match, you know, if you really just resent having to do work, you could still just sort of, you know, show up and just sit there and watch a football match with James Miller. You know, you don't need to do anything if you really don't want to.
Yeah, well, that's a clap for you.
Good thing that Jose Mourinho respects the institutions of English football.
That's right.
He would never.
I mean, Jose Mourinho is nothing if not respectful of everything.
Well, on that note, I think it's time to wrap it up. Ben, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me on Twitter at ComradeUSpurs, tweeting about Jose Mourinho's moral compass guiding the Premier League to spiritual fulfillment and success.
Brian, where can people find you tweeting about Tottenham Hotspur?
You can find me on Twitter at Brian_Ashlock. It's Brian with a Y. And you can check out all my tweets where I'm just brainstorming how best to use the Jose Mourinho and Joe Sacramento gif where they discover that Raheem Sterling is already on a yellow card. Because I think that's probably the most gif-able thing that's ever come out of Tottenham.
I don't know about that.
I mean, between that and the Mauricio Pochettino, like, blowing a raspberry and, you know, I don't know. I think that's pretty good.
And you can find me on Twitter, at skipjack0079, just sharing the latest in Tottenham and professional wrestling news. I know that's what everyone comes here for. Thank you for listening. Give us some 5-star reviews on iTunes. Help us pay the imaginary bills that we need to pay that only your iTunes reviews are good for, apparently. On that note, for Ben, for Brian, and of course, for Brett Rainbow, I've been your host, Greg. Come on, you Spurs.